natural forms burn toxic green. Vacant eyes lit with everlasting hellfire.
Hey there, and welcome to this week's episode of Let's Watch Scary Movies. As always, we are your horror hosts. I am Jenny.
And I'm Caitlin.
And once again, guys, we're sick. Why is it whenever me and Caitlin actually get together afterwards, we both have like some sort of death plague?
You got it way worse. I feel really bad.
You got COVID.
I did get COVID, but I didn't get COVID from hanging out with you.
No, it was two weeks today. So in the 2 weeks since I've been back from yours, I've been sick. I had like a really bad like cold virus, and now I've got a chest infection, and you caught COVID.
And I got COVID. And I got COVID from one of our listeners. Shout out to Tracy.
Yay, Tracy.
Who loves our podcast. And I saw her a friend's birthday, and God bless her. I think she'd caught it a few days earlier but didn't realize it. We were chatting away, just the two of us, then I think she gave it to me. And so I am currently quarantined on this beautiful winter's day. So,
and I am occasionally coughing up a lung. Sounds like I have consumption.
Ooh, I want like a 1700s disease. So you can have consumption. Ooh, I'll have gout.
Okay, you can have gout. We do drink red wine and eat red meat and cheese. So
I'm literally Henry VIII. Or you could have consumption, I could have dysentery.
No, I think you'd rather have gout than dysentery.
Okay, I don't know. Is dysentery
the
one?
Dysentery is.
Is that the one you get from like not eating enough limes?
No. Dysentery is basically bacteria in water that makes you shit yourself to death. It's like,
yep, that's what I've got.
Like you literally like shit liquid until you die.
Horrible.
Yeah.
So what's the one I'm thinking of where you don't
You're
eat
thinking
enough, like,
of
fruit.
Scurvy.
Okay, I'll have scurvy. You have consumption.
Scurvy's like a pirate disease.
Consumption's like a whore from like the Renaissance disease.
I'm like a you know, a Victorian prostitute dying of consumption. And you're like some pirate dying of scurvy.
A pirate that doesn't get enough citrus.
Yeah.
Great. It's going great. Okay, perfect.
And all of that, guys, would probably make more fucking sense than the film that we're talking about today.
So, first of all, I would like to read a headline about this film.
Okay.
This is the headline that I read. And then convinced Jenny that we had to watch this film. So Jenny's visiting me in London 2 weeks ago. We're hanging out, having the best time. And we decided, obviously, we're going to watch some scary movies for the podcast. And I'm Googling what's out, what's streaming, you know, what's of interest. And I find the following headline. Now, bear in mind that this headline is from the Daily Mail, which is sort of like in America. I'm trying to think what the equivalent is. Maybe the National
Inquirer.
National Enquirer. So maybe it's like very got anyway. So the headline reads as follows, and I quote: "It invades your soul in a way no other film can. New experimental horror film Skinamarink leaves viewers paralyzed with fear and terrified of the dark. A sinister flick is labeled the scariest film ever made." Well. Of course, I say to Jenny, well, we're watching this. It's on Shudder. We have to. This is it. This is the one. Anything that's called the scariest film ever made, I'm in. I want to watch the scariest film ever made.
Absolutely.
I want to be so afraid that I cannot sleep. This is what I'm looking for all the time. And I have to say, this film did not live up to expectations. I don't know, Jenny, what's your... Well, we need to get the film summary in haiku format. So there's
okay,
that.
Haiku format.
Have we confirmed what a haiku is? 579?
I think it's supposed to be 575.
575. Okay.
That's what I'm going with. So, okay. Two kids in a house.
Mm-hmm.
No idea what the fuck is... Okay, happening. That's too many syllables, but still. what did I just watch? Yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah. Right.
Oh, God,
I feel like I need to. I need to get up the actual summary, the plot synopsis that we read for this film.
Yeah.
IMDb, and I'm gonna read it. This is IMDb's one. I'm not sure if it will make more sense than my haiku, but two children wake up in the middle of the night to find their father is missing and all the windows and doors in their home have vanished. That sounds fucking creepy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That, I am there, you know. I'm in.
Yeah.
Two children in peril in a creepy, you know, alone in a creepy house. Instantly. Like, children are creepy on their own, but that sounds incredibly creepy. It is, I think in the UK, it's a Shudder exclusive. It came out in 2022. It was filmed and released.
It says, yeah, the initial release was July 2022, but I didn't hear anything about it until, I want to say, end of January, early Feb. Like, very end of Jan.
Yeah.
It's Canadian, directed by Kyle Edward Ball in his directorial debut. And can I point out, has 71% on Rotten Tomatoes, which is frankly... baffling.
I mean, yes. A lot of people, since hearing that we watched it, have asked me whether they should watch it or not. And it's a really difficult one for me to recommend to people. I want to watch it again.
Really? I just say yes. I say yes, definitely. Definitely. I would recommend, if you are a horror film fan, like, okay, if horror is not your thing, but you watch, let's say, one or two a year, at Halloween or with your partner or something, would I recommend this? No, I wouldn't. But if you are a horror aficionado, which I'm assuming most of the listeners are, if you are taking the time to listen to a horror movie or a podcast dedicated solely to horror movies, I'm guessing you like them. So yes, I would recommend it because I do feel like it is an experience.
Oh, it absolutely is. I think it's more the case of, because like this film has divided everybody. You go on to like horror movie, any of the horror movie like Facebook pages or web chats and things, and this film is so divisive. It's probably one of the most I've actually seen, with like so many people saying that they loved it and were terrified by it, and so like, and the other half just being like, what did I just watch? I think they should have made it more clear how experimental the film is. It is very different to pretty much any other film out there. So yeah, I would say I really wish that I'd got to see this film in a cinema. I think being in a cinema on a big screen in the dark where it's more immersive,
I probably
would have found it a lot easier to watch. There were parts of this film that did really, really scare me. It's just that rather than going from kind of entertained to scared, scared, like most horror films, I went from utter boredom / confusion, scared, bored, scared. And it was very it was kind of jarring experience. I have ADHD, which, you know, can make watching any film hard. But watching this, you know, with you, we probably had a couple of drinks because it was evening by the time we got around to watching it. You know, we'd been like having lots of fun and just mucking around. So going into it in that frame of mind, I really struggled with this film. Really struggled. You have to be able to immerse yourself in it entirely. And I just think for some people, that's not going to be possible. Like if you couldn't watch this film and be like, even taking notes was taking me out of, you know, was making it harder for me to focus on the film. So I probably... Yeah, I think you have to have really good focus, no distractions, and be like completely immersed in it to really be able to appreciate what it's doing.
I agree that sort of the environment in which you're watching it and the state of mind that you go into it with makes a huge difference. Usually a film can shift me into the right space. This one, I struggled to connect with it, and I found the experience frustrating.
Yes.
Which was not enjoyable. And I also, I guess there were scary moments, but I didn't find it overwhelmingly scary. And I think part of that is, as Jenny, as you said, like, part of where we were at the moment that we turned it on. I remember that we had to wait for the sun to go down because we were in my sitting room, and my sitting room is too suffused with light to be able to even see. And so we waited for it to be dark, and then I still couldn't see.
Yeah, like, we still couldn't see.
I was peering at my screen, like thinking, like my eyes hurt.
Yeah.
Trying to watch it.
I think if we'd watched it in a cinema, you know, on a big screen.
Yeah, and I agree, and I would like to watch it again, and I have thought that since. I've even thought about just putting it on.
Yeah.
Just on my own. But yeah, I mean, so if you were going to give it I don't know, how many windowless houses would you give this film?
Right. Well, I gave it, after watching it, immediately after watching it, I gave it one.
You did, yeah.
I did. I was angry.
You were so mad.
I was so mad at this film. But I always, and this is why I quite like doing it where I have a bit of time to digest things, because my brain, because of the ADHD, sometimes it takes me a little while to actually be able to sit with different things and to see what sticks with me and if anything sticks for me for a film. And this film has stuck with me. So I would like to increase my score. I would probably increase it. I'm going to give it 2.5.
Okay. Bit of a jump up there. I was thinking
maybe 3, but I'm not sure.
Well, this is the thing. I want to rewatch it because I do think it might, it probably will affect my score. So yeah. I gave it a 2. And my reasoning for that was, I could recognize that for many people, this would be very scary.
Yeah.
I do think, I gave it darkness monsters. That's what I called it. 2 darkness monsters. I do think to some extent it was style over substance. Like the director was trying so hard to make it, to evoke a feeling, which I do think they were slightly successful at. But I think my problem was that my eyes hurt and that I didn't care so much.
It was way too long as well.
Yeah, for what it is, which is, you know, a lot of shots of sort of penetrating darkness that is, you're squinting at the screen, because they've also made it so grainy. Like the director has chosen the quality of the film to be very grainy and quite poor.
It's got a very found footage kind of feel to it, like Blair Witch, you know, what's it called, Paranormal Activity. It's kind of like that. It's set in 1995, so I think it's supposed to be kind of very similar to like watching, you know, like an old video from 1995.
Yeah.
So the quality is very grainy. It's a very very subdued color palette, and you're looking at very obscure angles the whole time because you're kind of watching going through the whole thing, following, I think he's supposed to be 4, a little boy who's about 4 years old. So you're looking at everything you're looking at in this film is from like a child's perspective.
Well, yes and no, because there were also tons of shots from like a ceiling perspective. Like you're up, like not just looking at the ceiling, but actually like up high.
Yeah.
The camera. So, I mean, I don't even know, the consistency that you just alluded to doesn't even necessarily exist either. And it is very unsettling and creepy at times. And part of it feels very dreamlike or nightmare-like because there's no rules of this world. There's no consistent rules of the world. So it's got a very surreal dreamlike quality to it.
To me, it felt like basically Carl Edward Ball was trying to create, you know, David Lynch's wet dream.
That should be the summary. That should absolutely be the summary.
Like, yeah.
Yeah, I had given it to Darkness Monsters because I could appreciate the feeling, you know, but I didn't care enough and I didn't connect with it. And maybe that's intentional. I did think about that as well. Like, it is intentionally difficult to connect with it. And so, okay, if that is an intentional choice, that it's like an Ayn Rand thing, right? Like, you can't connect to the characters. Like,
yeah,
I can see that, but I don't know. Maybe it's just what I need personally, like when I'm watching horror films, but I can appreciate it. So that's why I gave it two stars.
Yeah.
Well, shall we attempt to?
I think, we can't. I mean, it's hard to even say that there are spoilers for this film because that plot synopsis was kind of giving this film more plot than it actually has. But yeah, I feel like just in case anyone who's listening hasn't watched it yet, we'll put the breakdown warning in and tell people maybe go away and watch it before listening to the rest.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's do it.
Let's do it.
Now it's time for a breakdown.
Okay, so we're in 1995. Okay. I almost feel like with this, the best thing we can do is just kind of talk a little bit about, kind of give a brief description of what what happens at, kind of talk about it from there, because I don't think we're going to be able to run through it like we normally do.
Yeah, I mean, I've got notes here that sort of talk through it a bit, but earlier I sort of said it has this dreamlike quality, and it does in the sense that nothing really flows from scene to scene. That's not really what happens here.
Yeah.
I will say that they run all the credits first at the top of the film, which I really liked because it's quite old school, and they did it in this kind of old school font, and yeah, the shot is of like carpet, but it's all shot below the knee. And you can see that it's a kid and a grown up, and the grown up seems to be sort of tending to the kid, which you find out in one of the very few scenes of dialogue. I guess it's not even really dialogue, it's the dad on the phone.
But yeah.
You get some, because really the whole thing has like 20 lines of text in the whole film. Which is fine. That doesn't bother me. But it does, like Jenny said, make it a little bit difficult to go through scene by scene because it doesn't really work like that. But again, it's very grainy. It's very dark. There's lots of shadows. Sometimes you only see like one sliver of the scene because the rest is in darkness. And you get a lot of long lingering shots on seemingly sort of banal everyday things, right? Like toys scattered on the floor, or a door, or you know, TV sounds sort of coming from the other room. So,
and you hear the dad on the phone, and he's basically saying that there's two children in this film. There's only four people in this entire film, and even then they're not really necessarily there. So you have two children, Kevin, who I think he's supposed to be about four, and then his slightly older sister Kaylee, and then the mum and the dad. Most of the film I don't think you see the dad. Oh, you see the dad once, I think, and you see the mum a couple of times maybe, but
again you see them, but they're always sort of shrouded in darkness, lots of
facing
shadows.
facing away.
You never really, like, I couldn't describe for you if the dad was blonde or like, I don't know. So
I think he's bald.
Or bald. I'm not sure.
Yeah. Yeah. You never really see them. And the only people, and even then, like, I think, I'm not sure you ever see the little boy's face.
Mm-mm.
You see Kaylee's face once or twice, just later on. And I don't think you see the mum's face either. And I'm not even sure we really see the dad. So yeah, you're mostly seeing like weird angles of like this house. And you hear the dad on the phone saying that the little boy, Kevin, fell down the stairs and, like, he's banged his head. And I think he's had to go to the hospital. And his sister, Kaylee, was saying that he was sleepwalking. And I think that's kind of really important in this whole film, because it's like, at the end of this film, is it that this whole thing has been, like, his head injury? You know, we're already looking at things from, like, a four-year-old's perspective. You know, we're kind of looking at him, like you said, from below the knee angles the whole time. So it's always, you always see like the legs or the feet or the toys or the floor, or like looking up at like weird parts of the ceiling. is it because the little boy's got concussion? So the way that we're processing what he's seeing or like his environment is.
Yeah. I mean, when I, after we watched it, I did read some theories online, and this was one of them, that he had hit his head.
Yeah.
Or whatever. And this was him in a coma or in a nightmare. Yeah. I mean, yeah, there's different. I find these reductive, these theories, personally, because I mean, maybe some people, that's the fun of it. But I don't know. I guess for me, the director's trying to achieve something bigger than that. So it's like we're scrabbling for a storyline that we can hold on to that resembles something like to real life, and I think that totally goes against the point of it, but that's just my theory, so
yeah,
I don't know. But yeah, so you can, I also think it's worth pointing out that during this part where the dad's on the phone and he's talking about, oh, Kaylee said Kevin was sleepwalking, they use subtitles, and I wasn't sure why they were using subtitles. Like, are we meant to be, because a few times throughout there's subtitles, right?
Yeah.
And it's almost like, is this meant to be like, what, why are this selective subtitle choices? Is it meant to be like what the things the person on the other side of the phone said? I'm not sure. So
yeah,
there's a million more questions than you're ever going to get answers. But yeah, so then one kid goes to get the other kid. You can sort of see them like kneeling, and then the door frames disappear. The window blinds and the curtains are like on the wall, but there's no window, and
yeah,
you hear one of the lines of dialogue is, where did it go? And then dad seems to be missing, the phone doesn't work.
Yeah, they tried to pick up the phone line's like dead. But the one thing, because obviously things go missing, like the news about the door frame, one thing I really hated was every time anything disappeared, you kind of, it flashed and then would disappear, and it would go like whoop, make this really silly noise before it happened.
And yeah,
every time it happened, I was getting really annoyed. It was like watching like an old, it was like watching Star Trek with the phaser thing, like the transporter. Every time you use that, it makes like a silly like noise. That's what this was doing.
Yeah,
it was like whoop 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 whoop, and then it would disappear. Yeah,
and you've got like the kids are watching VHS videos on this, you know, old school 90s like big TV, and you can hear Kaylee sort of say, Kevin, it's time to get up. And the TV's just kind of always on. And then you have this thing where the camera's always pointed up or down. It's never really on the actual action. So like Jenny said, it's either looking up at the corners of the ceiling or looking down. And there's, you know, there could be like Kaylee's in the room and she's talking, or the TV's playing or whatever might be happening, but we're not looking at that. Like the action is focused elsewhere. The camera is focused elsewhere rather than on the action. And then you have, why is mom crying? Why hasn't anyone come? I don't know. And then the sister says, we should be quiet.
Yeah. And then my notes descend into, I'm 7/5 bored. I'm deathly afraid nothing is ever going to happen. Oh, the chair's on the ceiling.
Oh, also the toilet disappears.
Yeah, now the toilet is gone, and now there's a Barbie on the ceiling.
Yes, I'm glad we're in the same place, because it's hard to tell. But I did write in my notes, it's interesting because kids seem to have an intuition that something's not right, but no real reason for something to not be right. I mean, yes, okay, Barbie's on the ceiling, toilets are disappearing, there's no windows, like this is super weird, but that's like, why are they whispering? There's no real indication that they need to be whispering, but they are. They feel like they have to be quiet.
Know, it's like they've moved, dad's disappeared, they've moved downstairs into the living room, and they keep like they think they can hear that their mother crying upstairs. And at one point one of them's like, I don't want to talk about mom, when they're talking about her.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, what's happening like with mom? Where is she? Is she really crying? And then I've just got like, I thought like, it's like they're in like a real life Sims game. Did you ever play The Sims?
I did not, but
I love The Sims. And it's like, you know, you build this house and you have these Sims and these children, these people, and they're in a house, but then you can start doing things like removing the doors and the windows and the toilets and things. And it like, it basically, you know, if they can't get outside, then they can't get to the food, and then they starve. If there's no toilet, they like wet themselves. And it's like some sort of weird torture that someone's doing to them by moving all the windows and doors.
Okay, so that's basically what's happening here. The Sim nightmare.
Yeah. This is like someone playing Sims. And then Kaylee goes upstairs.
Did you get, like, I'm curious your thoughts. Like, the kids are clearly afraid, and we don't know what they're afraid of. I mean, as I said, obviously weird things are happening. Like, doors are disappearing, and there's toys on the ceiling, and, like, their toys are being moved. Yeah, and like Jenny says, they move everything downstairs because they don't want to be upstairs. But what did you think that they were afraid of?
Well, I was thinking that, like, I don't know. Either I thought maybe, like, I thought all sorts of things, that maybe, like the mum was dead upstairs. Mm-hmm. And they were like, we can't go up there. Like, something bad's happened. Like, they know something bad's up there, but they just don't know what. So they're hiding downstairs. I thought maybe... I don't really know. I thought that they were basically just like, oh, scared. And they knew that, like, whatever was causing their fear was coming from upstairs. And that's why they moved downstairs. But I think there's like a voice, or like you hear like the dad's voice or something telling Kaylee to go upstairs. Because she goes up.
Yeah, that's what I called the darkness monster. And I feel like it was positioning itself as the parents when it wasn't.
Yeah.
But even this entity, whatever it might be, like it's only ever kind of alluded to. I found it very unsettling that the kids were afraid of something, but you don't know what it is. And
yeah,
it kind of goes back to that like childish intuition that kids kind of have sometimes. I did find all of that very disturbing. But yeah, so
then this was one of the scariest scenes in the film, I thought.
Well, it's one of the only scenes in the film where you have something actually happening.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
But even then, so like you hear this voice, so she goes upstairs, and this is the bit where I'm like, is it the dad that we see at this point, or is it the darkness monster? You don't really know because you haven't seen anyone apart from the kids' feet at this point.
Well, it's meant to, I think it's meant to be the dad. I think you're right about that. Yeah.
And then there's this voice, and it's telling her to look under the bed. And I'm just
Yeah, and the whole point of view here, as you said, is from the kids' perspective, and I really, really liked that.
Yeah.
For this, there was that consistency, and I appreciated that. So
yeah, that's all we're asking, just a little bit of something to be able to follow, to keep your interest. But yeah, so his voice is telling her to look under the bed, and she looks under the bed, and this is the point where I was so tense. I'm like, no, don't look under the bed. But nothing happens, and then she's like, oh, I think she's like, there's nothing there, and it's like, look again. Or something, and when she looks again, there's still nothing there. But at this point, I'm like waiting, because obviously we're about half an hour into the film at this point. It's 100 minutes, this film. About half an hour in, and nothing has happened apart from a chair on the ceiling and a toilet disappearing, and nothing happens. But now the mum sat on the other side of the bed, and we're looking at it from Kaylee's point of view, and she's like sat facing away, and she's just like sitting there crying, I think.
Well, she, yeah, so in using that perspective of the kid, the camera literally goes under the bed, so you lose sight of the adult sitting on the bed. So camera goes under the bed, comes back up, dad's like, look again, or the dad entity, then she goes back down, comes up, and now it's the mom sitting there instead of the dad, and sitting facing away on the edge of the bed, and says, we love you and Kevin very much, and then asks Kaylee to close her eyes. And again, you don't see the mouth move. You're not seeing, it's just a kind of a disembodied voice that you assume is the mom. So then the camera goes all black to indicate the closed eyes of the kid, which I liked that. Then reopen and mom is gone. But you can hear noises like people moving in another room, or, you know, it sounds like there's people in the house, as in not Kevin, but just other adults almost.
Yeah.
And then the same voice kind of tells Kaylee to go back downstairs. And you can hear like a crunching sound, like sort of crunching and breathing. And then the screen flashes.
And that's like a weird cheap. I didn't like that, the screen flashes, because it's like a weird jump scare, but it's kind of cheap because it's like we've been waiting for something terrifying to happen with a little girl upstairs. And it hasn't. And now you're going to like release that tension by just flashing a camera.
Yeah, I agree. I didn't love that device. And just, you know, and of course everyone's whispering and it's super dark and it brings this feeling of tension. But I think the thing about tension in films is that it will only last for so long because it's exhausting. And this is why you very often break up very serious scenes with like a joke or a laugh or something to kind of give it some rhythm.
Yep.
this film doesn't have that. This film doesn't have any rhythm. I didn't feel. And so you've just got this tension building, but then there's no kind of payoff, I guess, or there's no release from it. But anyway, so Kaylee comes back downstairs. Something's not right with her. You can just kind of tell whatever she's just experienced. She's not going to tell Kevin about it.
No, she even asks, like, what happened upstairs?
Yeah. She's not talking. And now it seems like she's disappeared.
We had about 10 minutes at this point of just I've even written down, like, this is an entire movie of static shots of ceilings, furniture, and Lego. And it's like, oh, now there's some random stuff floating on the walls. And you hear this kind of man's voice, which is like the darkness monster, I guess, saying something about the basement. But it's annoying because not all of the dialogue is subtitled, but it's all right. Very, very low. So yeah. It's really hard. Like, I struggle to hear it anyway. And it's really, really difficult. I didn't really understand what that was being said when it wasn't subtitled.
Yes. Was it the dad's voice? Is it the entity positioning themselves as the dad? Something about a basement. Yes. Again, I feel like Jenny and I are trying to follow like our notes, and I'm just hoping I'm in the same place as you are.
Yeah. Kind of
like, where'd Kaylee go?
I think basically he's like, he goes downstairs after and he hears his voice. And you hear Kaylee say, Kevin, I'm scared. I feel strange. And this is the first time you actually see anyone's face properly in this film.
Mm-hmm.
And like her mouth's gone or her eyes are gone, like all blurred.
Yeah, it's like her face for a brief flash and then it's got blurred out features. And then you've got this creepy entity voice sort of calling to Kevin and telling him to sleep. And then suddenly the TV stops and it's very, very silent, which, again, good use of silence in a tense moment. And then the TV kind of starts messing up, almost like it's going to break. And the toy disappears.
Yes, the toys all vanish.
And you hear this creepy voice say, I want to play.
I want to play. Fuck that noise.
Yeah. And then I have here a bunch of Z's indicating, I guess, that I was bored. I'm not sure.
Yeah. So this is probably, again, I guess it's scary because basically you have this voice saying, I want to play. And the voice says to Kevin, put a knife in your eye.
Yeah. This part got me a little bit. This was one of the scarier moments in the film. But again, you have to go through so much bullshit to get. Sorry, I shouldn't say bullshit. It's someone's art. You have to go through all of these long, lingering darkness shots where nothing happens to get to this part. And by the time you're here, you're just like, oh, God, is anything going to happen? And I don't know. Is it reflective of our society as a whole that we're so impatient? I know, like, Jenny was talking about she's got ADHD, and I can see most people that would are neurodivergent probably would really struggle more than the average person with this film. But, I mean, I was struggling 100%. Yeah. I mean, so it's just kind of like you're waiting. So by the time something happens, you're just, like, relieved that there's any kind of action or, you know, because in our description of this, we're jumping from, like, action scene to action scene, but in between these action scenes is 25 minutes of
feelings
of dark shots and nothing happening. No dialogue. You can't really see what's on the screen, literally 25 minutes of it. So yeah, bear that in mind. Yeah. But yeah, so finally you get the entity saying, put the knife in your eye. And then you hear very disturbing screaming and crying, which I can only assume Kevin has put the knife in his eye, and you get sort of blood dripping down the wall in the next shot.
Which was blatantly, I didn't like the shot, because it was blatantly just someone with like a bucket of blood.
Yeah, the way that it was spilling out sort of defied gravity. It was like spilling sideways, like horizontal.
Yeah.
If that makes any sense. But the TV's all fucked up now, and it turns off, it's broken, and now all the lights are out, because the TV sort of provided the only
real like source of light, wasn't it?
Yeah, exactly. And so now it's off and it's really, really dark. And I wrote long-haired person ? Who?
Yeah, I've just got like back of someone's head. Like, who is it? Is it the mom? Is it Kaylee? Like,
I thought it was Kaylee, but it seemed adultish. So, yeah. You know, it's anyone's guess. You're watching a dark screen, listeners. That's in fact, if your TV's off right now, you could just stare at it for 90 minutes and get a similar feeling. So,
yeah. At this point,
yeah, you get the call, the 911 call. So,
The phone's working now. At this point, I'm like, yes, you know. There's something like the phone working now is going to be a, you know, some sort of plot device. Like we're going to get like something,
some kind of answers. Yeah. Yeah. So he calls 911 and he gets through and he's speaking to a operator and you kind of find out he says he's hurt himself and he feels sick and that he's,
I hate that bit when he's like, yeah, he's like, I hurt his eyes. I feel sick.
Yeah. I felt sick thinking about it because he's four and like it's disturbing.
At this point, he's alone, you know,
and he's completely alone. We don't know where the sister is. The doors are gone, which is a creepy thing to say. A little kid to say the doors are gone. So then you realize that the real phone, which we thought was a real phone, was actually a toy phone.
Those Fisher Price.
Yeah,
Fisher Price toy phones with the moving eyes that you pull along. Like
back in the '80s. Yeah. And then he says, "I have a line. You did that."
Yep.
And it was that the voice saying to Kevin that he did that?
That was, I think it was Kevin saying it to, because it turns into the phone, and I think after a few, but like it's not straight away. It's a few seconds, and then he's like, you did that, and then you've got like some sort of weird static noises that it's making. I really didn't like the static noises, and you hear a voice say, I can do anything. Kaylee didn't do as she was told, so I took her mouth away.
Yeah, creepy.
Well fuck.
Yeah. And then the same sort of staticky, like creepy voice asks Kevin to come upstairs.
Yep.
And this happens a couple of times, and so he gets a flashlight, right? He's got like a flashlight, a torch, right?
Yeah, I think so.
And he goes up with the flashlight, and then I have here, he's on the ceiling.
Yeah, he basically walks into the bedroom, I guess his parents' bedroom, and it's almost like a void at this point. And he walks into it, and he walks into it, and then it all flips, so he's now walking on the ceiling, and he's just like sat, which I think is the poster for the film, isn't it? The shot of him on the ceiling.
Yeah. But the thing, again, it's so hard to make anything out. You can't really see. I was completely unsure what's happening. You've got sort of noises. I will say as well that the sound design is great. It's great. Yep. I really hated it / loved it, as in I hated it because it was scary and disorienting and unpleasant, but all of that made it all the more, you know, disturbing and effective for what it was. So yeah, so then you've got 500, this it comes up on the screen, 572 days. I'm guessing that's how long that he's been in the house. So
yeah,
the toys are stacked on the ceiling. The ceiling is a sky, inverted triangle. I don't know what the hell's going on. Kid with long hair sitting facing away, and then it fades out. And everything is upside down. And you get the TV kind of on, TV off, TV on, TV off. And the house.
Yeah, with like the white noise.
Yeah, the house is, I can't read my own writing. House is filled with light.
Yeah, I've just got the room fades into oblivion. And then you see like these eyes. And you're like, are they eyes? Because obviously you're straining. At this point, like, you know, we're probably, an hour and a half into this film. And you're like staring and my eyes are sore. I'm like, what am I looking at anything? And then you realize it's the eyes of that creepy fucking phone.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and then the eye starts to glow, then it vanishes.
I have here photos, almost like distorted photos. Like strange photos, and then
See like weird images. I think again of it's like Kaylee, I think, with like all the eyes, all the family members with their eyes and their faces are all blurred. And I'm like written down, like, I still don't like this. Like, what is happening? And then you just hear like Kevin's voice say, "Can we watch something happy?"
Well, and you get like blood sort of splattered on the ceiling.
Yeah, and then weird face.
Yeah, then you get this line that Jenny just said, and then you get a door. The door disappears. then you have a face in the darkness. I couldn't tell man, woman. I wasn't sure.
No.
What's your name? And then no reply. And that's Kevin asking the like entity thing.
And then, you hear a voice say, go to sleep.
Yeah. And then that is the end of the film.
Yeah.
That's, I don't know how long that took us, but not very long. So, and again, like, so little happens, but all the rest of this 100 minutes is filled with just essentially darkness.
Mm-hmm. Grainy shots into... I quite like the use of, like, liminal space and things. It does add that kind of extra creepy vibe.
Well, I mean, the director is intentionally challenging the audience, and I like that. You know, I'm not adverse to any of that. I just think, I don't know. I really think I need to watch it again.
Yeah.
I don't, in talking about it, I mean, I gave it 2 stars because it just wasn't for me, I don't think. Mm-hmm. I did not enjoy it, nor did I find it overly scary, although it did have moments. I don't mind a challenge. I don't mind... You know, Gaspar Noé, is that his name? Like, he's made some films that remind me of this a little bit. Like, I'm trying to think of the one. I'll think of. We'll get the title later. But he did a film that was a bunch of dancers. Mm-hmm. They're rehearsing at a party, and then they all take acid, and it just gets absolutely insane.
I know which one you're about.
And there's there's very little dialogue. You know, that makes any sense. There's no continuity of storyline. The camera kind of follows these dancers around in and out of like their madness, of them just like losing their minds.
Yeah.
And it's a very dark, disturbing film that I liked. And you don't need necessarily the dialogue, but there was a little bit more to keep me interested, I suppose, or to keep me
you need something. If engaged. You haven't got anything like dialogue, you need something visually to keep you interested. And I think I genuinely think if this film had been like an hour, I would have liked it a lot more.
Yeah.
Now, have you seen, because this film, is it Kyle Edward Ball? Is that his name? This was his first feature length film. He has a YouTube channel where he makes a little horror shorts, I think. And he had one that that Skinner Inc. is based on called Heck, which is just under 30 minutes long. And I haven't actually got around to watching it yet, but I'm going to. But I have read about it because I knew I was going to have time to watch it before we recorded. So I read up on it. And basically it's, a half an hour version of this film where you've got but I think it hasn't got the sister. It's just the little kid on his own. And like weird things are happening, but apparently there's a lot more dialogue in that, and there's a lot more. It's a tiny bit more conventional in the way it's filmed, and the kind of the title of the short film kind of gives it away, I guess, is that the little kid he's in hell, and this is his hell. And I think there's a line in it where he's like, where he says like, oh, I like mommy, like daddy, I'm sorry, I got cancer, please come back.
Yeah.
And so some people are like that, actually having that little bit of just something to kind of keep you going, some sort of explanation or plot, made it a much more enjoyable experience. But I do want to watch that. But yeah, I do just think that this film was too long for what it, for what it is.
The director was sort of YouTube famous because he would create short films based off of subscribers' descriptions of their nightmares, which I think is such a cool idea because nightmares are like what people, their nightmares are so scary. So I love that. I'm really keen to actually check that out.
Yeah, I've had a look at his YouTube channel. It looks really cool.
Okay, yeah, I definitely want to check it out. But the thing is, when I was reading all of these different theories, like I went deep into Reddit, like horror Reddit, like reading people's theories. So there's the theory that the mom committed suicide and like one of the kids saw it.
Yeah.
And that's caused like this breakdown of the family that's all sort of symbolized by the film. Like the darkness and everything. There's the theory that we mentioned earlier that Kevin is in a coma and this is like his subconscious, what he sees in his subconscious. Yeah, and then I think there was another theory that he's actually sleepwalking during all of this, and it's taking.
Yeah, place. I wasn't sure if maybe it was just that, you know, he'd banged his head and things, and this was like some sort of like, you know, he was having some sort of weird nightmare, like concussion nightmare, not necessarily a coma, but you know, some sort of head injury. Yeah.
Well, and it was filmed in the director's childhood home.
Yeah,
which I also really love because that gave it, it did give it that nostalgic, you know, if you were. In 1995, I'm assuming the director was five or very, very young. I mean, I would have been a kid too, but like a teenager. So
I would have been 10.
Yeah, so it's like that general, you know,
like this kid is basically, so 1995, he's four. He's the same age as like my sister.
Right, yeah.
Like my brother and it's like my brother and sister being, you know, in this film. And I loved how that, you know, I did love the whole kind of way they showed how, you know, when you're a kid and you stare into the dark and you think you see, you know, you don't know if you're looking at something, your imagination makes up all kinds of scary things when you're just staring into the dark. And I did find that really effective the first maybe 30 minutes of it.
Exactly. Yeah,
after a while it just lost it for me.
And well, also like this idea, I think Jenny and I, we've talked about this on a previous episode, like let's say you're looking at a CCTV camera, right, a static shot of something, and mm-hmm. nothing's happening, and you're just watching it, like waiting, like that feeling, it's very unnerving. And I think the director was partially trying, like you're looking at quite static, again lingering shots of things for prolonged periods of time, just waiting, and that in and of itself is, you know, scary. It's that anticipation of something gonna happen, but then when nothing does happen, that then it becomes a test. It becomes exhausting, I feel.
Yeah, and you just, yeah, I, rather than being like tense or scared, I'm just frustrated, and that's not,
yeah,
like what I'd be going for when watching a horror film.
Yeah,
or any film really. I'm not sure I ever watch a film to be frustrated.
Right. Which is also why I again, but I'm sort of avoiding it because it was not enjoyable on any level.
And exactly. Not even, I'd have to be in like a very specific mood to actually be able to get through it again, I think. But I want to be in that mood because I do want to sit and watch it again.
Yeah. Yeah, me too. And I probably will.
Yeah, and that's why I've increased my score. Because I do want to watch it again. I didn't hate it so much that I never want to watch it again.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, that's why I've increased my score. But yeah, it's. I think if like Hitlin said, if you are a horror film fan, which I hope you are, if you're listening to this, then I do think you should check it out. But I just think you need to be very aware of the surroundings and kind of what you're going into. I think from what we read, we were expecting a very different film. Which is sometimes fine, like with Barbarian, you know, you watch the trailer, you went for one thing, got another one. But the actual kind of level of engagement was kept up in Barbarian.
Right. Oh, yeah. What we said in that episode was that it was unpredictable and it kept you guessing. And so that was scary, but also fun, but also super engaging. And I think that this film, there is a huge disengagement and a disconnect from what you're watching, and some of that I do think is intentional. I do think the director wanted you to feel that a little bit.
Yeah,
but then but the length is just a huge problem. I completely agree with you on that,
because this film is very much of the generation who have kind of grown up watching, like, you know, reading like Creepypasta on you know, on Reddit. It's got very much that kind of feel to me, and it reminded me a lot in some ways of We're All Going to the World's Fair, which we were,
yeah, I can see that. Yes, I can see that a little bit. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I just think, and you know, I just think that We're All Going to the World's Fair maybe was slightly more successful in keeping us interested.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yes. There was, that was still, we had all kinds of you know, all kinds of weird like videos and things like that, and we weren't really sure what we were seeing in some of it. So it managed to do that, but I just think it managed to keep be engaging at the same time. Whereas I think this film wasn't engaging all the way through enough. You know, it was too inconsistent. So then it made it harder for us to kind of keep interested all the way through.
Yes, I agree. But it does give that nightmare feel. And that feel is so hard to get from a film. And it does that very successfully.
Yeah, you know, that's why I increased the score. Because like, it did scare me. Like, it did have me tense. It did have me scared. It did remind me of those kind of childlike nightmare. Or like, when you have like a fever. And you have like weird fever dreams and things like that. It definitely had that kind of feel to it, and that has lingered with me, you know, in the 2 weeks it's been since we watched it. So I have increased the score. I just think, and for some people, they will absolutely love this film. So I'm not saying don't watch it. I'm not saying it's a two, therefore, you know, I don't think anyone should go out of their way to watch it. I just think there's a high chance that you're not going to enjoy it. Really,
it's funny because actually the more I think about it, the more I like it and I want to like it.
Exactly.
But the reality is, sitting there in that moment watching it, it's a test, it's a challenge, and it's not a fun one. Yeah. So hence I can see why it's so polarizing completely, because part of me wants to give it 5 stars, but then the part of me that was physically sitting there through 25 minutes of just darkness can't do that.
Like, it, for what it is, it's brilliant, but for what we wanted it to be.
Yeah. And I do also think it is a very dangerous game to read reviews and headlines like what we did at the top of the show and then have these expectations. And I think that's partially why some films like Barbarian is a great example of that. The less you know going in, like, I didn't read any review, nothing. I knew nothing. And it was all the better for it. And so here you get these, you know, to call it the scariest film ever made, get out of here. You can't do that. It's like setting yourself up for failure.
Yeah, I agree.
So yes, if you don't want to watch it, you could just stare at your darkened television for a good 100 minutes, or you could watch it. Those are your options.
Yep,
you might get the same feeling either way. But
yeah, and if you do watch it, I'd really, really like to hear your opinion.
Oh, so for sure. This please is let us know. I might add
like a poll or question or something to the recording so people can send us messages. Oh, I'd really love to hear it.
Yeah, because I would imagine my horror friends, I'm thinking like Tracy, Christopher, you know, my horror friends, probably will watch it. And it's one of those ones where you want to talk about it. That's why Reddit was going nuts with all these different theories.
Yeah.
And the one that kind of made the most sense was the one about him being in a coma and this being like the slow loss of, you know, maybe.
Yeah, his brain like damaged.
His brain damage. Yeah. But again, I find personally, I do find that sort of like you're reducing it to what you can, I don't know, what you can understand or the limits of your mind. And I think that that does it a disservice. It's meant to be more abstract and obscure and broader than that. And that's what makes it so fascinating.
I agree.
Talk to us. I'm dying to hear what some people think of this, for sure. And I definitely was really, really keen to chat to you about it, because we did talk briefly after we had watched it together, where we were both just like, "Wow, God, I need something else after that." Like, and then the movie we watched after was very, you know, fun and kind of the perfect antidote. But
yes,
yeah, okay. So when's the rewatch, Jenny?
Oh, I don't know. We'll schedule it in,
and we can always review Grease too.
Yes, we did take notes.
We did take notes. My notes are like a scribble scrabble jamboree.
Mm-hmm. if we recorded an episode on Grease 2, we would sing the whole way through.
Probably. I can't.
Then we should probably wait until we don't have chest infections and COVID.
I'm just saying. Cracking up. Beat the Cavaliers.
Rydell High. Beat the Cavaliers
for like 5 hours the next day. Yeah, you couldn't stop.
I couldn't stop. It was. I have school spirit for a fictional
for a American fictional
high school.
Well, it wasn't even that wasn't even a song. It was just a line.
Yeah,
stuck in her head.
Oh, so funny. Okay, so
Skinamarink, also the title, for those that don't know, I'm assuming, is based off of a 90s, sort of a late 80s, early 90s kids show in America called Sharon, Lois, and Bram.
Okay, also, I didn't know that.
It was also called The Elephant Show, and it had the song that you would sing, and there were, like, little pan movements that you would do, but you skinamarinky-dinky-dink, skinamarinky-doo, I love you, and that was the song.
Oh, so, okay.
I kept waiting for a clip of that show to show up in the film, and it didn't. But I'm guessing it was just a reference, as it was a kid's show. It's probably something like watch, but maybe they couldn't get the rights to it, or I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't know that. I did wonder where the name had come from. I meant to look it up.
I mean, I'm guessing. That's the only thing I can think of.
It makes sense.
They sing it in that show. So
yeah, that makes absolute sense, because they're, you know, watching kid's shows all the way through.
Yeah. And even... we didn't say this, but a lot of the cartoons that they're watching are creepy, because they're really old, dated cartoons in the public domain.
Yeah,
creepy. Also, there was at the beginning, in memory of or dedicated to someone.
It was, I've forgotten the gentleman's name. He was the assistant director, I think, and he passed away while the film was in post production. Very young, in his 20s. I'm not sure how, but yeah, sadly.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm trying to... I thought I had it somewhere. Oh, Josh Buchalter.
Yeah.
His friend and collaborator. Yeah.
Very sad.
Well, this may be the shortest episode in Let's Watch Scary Movie history.
No, we're at an hour. I think we're okay.
Okay. Well...
yeah. Rate, review, subscribe, all that jazz.
Speak don't to us listen about the film. Don't listen to the darkness monster.
No, don't put knives in your eyes, kids.
Don't put knives in your eyes. All right, Brothers Keg, take us out.
Bye.
Bye.